Good morning and welcome to the Vast Resources shareholder call. My name is Rosie, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you will be on listen only. However, you can submit your questions at any time via the chat function on your screen. If you need assistance, please press star zero on your telephone keypad, and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand you over to Andrew Pollea to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rosie. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Q3 Q&A for 2018. We're going to do things a little different this time because of the quantum of questions that have come through during the course of the weekend and again early this morning. And at the end of that, if there are any further questions, please feel free to use the chat. I won't go through the quarterly production report. Most of you have already seen the figures. The quarterly production report is now on the website. So if there are any further questions that need to be asked during the course of the Q&A session, feel free to type them in at the end of me answering the first 50 questions that have already been asked of us this morning. I'll start with, they've been broken into several sections. The first one is general corporate that were received over the course of the weekend. I'll read out the questions and follow them up with the answers as best as I can possibly answer without infringing on any AIM regulations. So I shall start with the general corporate. Question one is, a lot of shareholders now want to see things progressing and current project finalised before we set upon further projects. What are Vast's thoughts on this? Can Vast predict what project it feels can complete in year term, example within 6 to 12 months, and which projects may take slightly longer, example 12 months plus? What I can answer is the company is focusing on prioritising year-term cash projects and bolstering the management team. All other projects such as Blueberry, Zagra, etc. will be funded separately and have standalone management teams. So on the 6 to 12 months, the priority, of course, is to get Baeza operational and potentially the diamonds operational because they are the nearest term positive cash flow for the company. We're continuing with Manaila. However, as we all know, Manaila will have problems until we actually get the new equipment on site. But more importantly, and this is something that I'll answer later on some of the other questions, that Manaila was never going to be a profit centre for the company. It was always there to prove concept. It will, however, be a profit centre once the new plant is built. And due to the fact that 30% of our production costs are just trucking from the pit to the plant, and not many mines make more than 30% profit. So if you take that out from the bottom line and stick it back up into the top line, it becomes a profit centre once we have the new plant at the pit itself. Question two on general corporate. Shareholders on forums such as LSE and others are resorting to speculation due to lack of news flow and PR. It would be nice if Vast could provide clear, concise communication and some project plans, timeline, so the market knows clearly at what stage of a project we are and what can make informed decisions based around this information. There are clearly so many projects for Vast. It can be a minefield going through RNS's podcasts, etc., to find out where we currently are. It would be nice to have a place where this information will be clearly seen by shareholders. I agree with this question, and I concur. And what's been the resulting factor is over the next few weeks and months, because I don't want to put unrealistic timelines, we'll be updating a website that will be completely rebuilt. It'll include a project-by-project page and will provide updated information on the status of each phase of every project, and that will simplify the navigation and understanding. And more social media will be forthcoming as well. And building and managing this information is extremely time-consuming, but it is in progress. And as you know, we are slightly understaffed at the senior level, and we are now working together with some brides and other social media platforms to enable us to be able to provide up-to-date information for all the projects on a very, very easy-to-read format. So that is definitely forthcoming, and we've already started working on that, and it should be online sometime in the course of January. Some aspects of the website will be updated in a short period. Question three is, how is Vast managing internal resources for its project? Does Vast have specified project level management? At the moment, we are currently bolstering our human resources at the corporate level. However, the way that we've structured new projects is that we have individual management teams for each project. And each project, especially the ones that are funded externally, will have its own executive management team. But we are working on improving the executive team at the topco level. We've been restricted on cash. However, for example, we now have a new development manager who's assisting me greatly with new corporate funding. I've asked people to refrain from sending questions through at this point in time because we do have 50 questions, and you'll find that most of those questions will be answered in these 50 questions, and I will revert back to these chat questions at the end of the Q&A. Next question was, does Vast have any plans on having an internal marketing department? No, we don't have any plans on having an internal marketing department because we don't need extra overhead at the topco level, and we're not going to start employing people for non-income producing departments. We do, as I said, have a lot of PR changes coming over the course of the next 30 to 60 days, as I answered previously. Next question. Is Vast currently looking to change Nomad as PR at the moment is very limited compared to other shares? The Nomad sector is reducing. As most people know, in AIM, there were about 1,800 AIM companies listed. Now there are about 900. There are more and more Nomads either closing or leaving. They're all overworked. We are looking at the way we're doing, changing our PR. There are changes coming. But as I said, we are working on change. I don't think you can pinpoint the Nomad. I don't think it's right to do so. The next question, is there any way we can create more PR database for shareholders? It's all part of the new website and social media rebuild, so that will be coming as well. The next question, it would be nice if Vast could give some operational updates on Bait Supply, Moranga, Eureka, Giant Mine, et cetera, et cetera. Is Vast currently overworked at management level, so things are slowing down at the project level? If so, what is Vast plans to fix this? If not, can we get some market updates, big picture, on where we sit with each project? As I said, that will form part of the new PR campaign, and you will be getting regular updates. It's difficult to build a platform, and it is rather expensive to do so, but it is in progress. I wouldn't say that anything is falling behind. I think that people need to understand that, you know, delivery confirmations are funding married together on each project. We've been criticised in the past for providing information on timing basis based on third-party promises, and we don't want to provide that information until everything is 100% in the control of management to be able to provide deliverables. So, you know, I think it's a misconception that we're falling behind. Each project is at a different stage of the cost curve, and it's quite understandable that people are looking on a very short-term view, but, you know, we're a long-term growth company, and people need to understand that these projects generally take time. We're very fortunate that we've got these, you know, these projects that are quite advanced, but generally it takes from the time of discovery to the time of implementation 10 years and hundreds of millions of dollars. And where we are, I think we sit at the forefront is the fact that we've eliminated the major upfront cost of finding the assets and doing the prospecting work and exploration work, and we're already drilling on areas that we know exist. So I think that is a great advantage for the company, and I'm not quite sure that some of our shareholders understand what advantageous position we're sitting in. The next question. A lot of investors feel that Vast has currently outstretched itself with different number of projects on the go. We need things completing. Also, recent podcast, Andrew said that the company's understaffed. Moving forward, how will Vast manage this? Well, I don't particularly agree with the fact that we've outstretched itself. As I said, every project is at a different stage of the project chain. So, yes, we are understaffed, and that's due to financing. We don't like to spend money on big corporate overhead until the project is near or closer to start to generate cash. So we don't think that we're outstretched other than the lack of proper cash itself. Projects take time. We have Baitsa, and we're increasing management to enable us to implement the operational project. The medium and longer-term projects will be funding at SPV level, as I said earlier, and that will include outsourced projects teams to save overhead at the corporate level. So, no, I don't believe that we've overstretched ourselves as far as the number of projects we've got on in pipeline. I think that there's a correlation between, you know, near-term project and long-term project, and I think people need to understand that each project has its own management team and will be managed accordingly. Next question. We agree that Andrew has the company and shareholders at heart to add value. Thank you very much. Are we capable of completing the projects we have based on the resources we have and in a timely manner, or is fast but not more than it can chew? Well, it's very similar to the previous question. I think the answer is the company has the capacity to complete the projects. And by completing the projects, I think that means bringing them into production or getting them to the next stage of that value chain. And we will be bolstering management accordingly as need be. As I said, there are 50 questions and we're only up to question 10, so we'll be here for a little while. Question 10. It looks like things have already slowed down with the company and updates. Shareholders currently are second-guessing what's happening with so many projects to focus on. We agree some of these are company changing, but feel that we need to focus now on completing the projects that we have and getting them to a suitable level of completion. I'm a little bit concerned about people talking about completion. Each project, completing stages, completely different meaning. So the things have not slowed down. The focus needs to be on running the business itself. We're a multifaceted business, and focus needs to be on the growth of the company itself. We will be providing updates only when deliverables are achieved and where there are matters that we can actually make in the public domain according to AIM regulation. As I said, each project is a different stage and requires a different skill set. Therefore, I don't think there's any doubt that we can achieve what we've set out to do, because each team is involved at a different level of or a different stage of the operation, and as one stage completes, the next team gets handed over, then the next team, then the next team. So I don't believe we've outstretched ourselves at all. Next one. As there are so many projects that FAST has, including Morangi, Diamond Fields, Blueberry, etc., is it difficult to keep track of the status where we are at the project on an individual basis? Are there any plans moving forward to FAST to allow shareholders better knowledge where we are and where we sit with each project? Also, I'd love an update on the Eureka and Giant Mine. These will all be provided in the new website and the new communication policy within the new year. We're a minority partner in some of these projects, and the core management team is now focused on where FAST is a majority asset holder. So the likes of Eureka and Morangi, we're changing our shift, and Giants, we're changing our shift on our core corporate team towards the ones where we own, 70, 80, 90, 100%. I think that's more important for the shareholders. The other projects are being very well managed, and they don't take a lot of management time other than overview and review. And just to put something into context, is the delay in the quarterly production report was not due to anything other than there were some anomalies in some of the data that we'd received, and until they had been third-party verified, we didn't want to release quarterly production, so I just thought I'd add that in. The next question, can you stop using the word soon and imminent if it's not going to happen? It helps traders with VAST. This actually is a little bit disturbing because I have never used the word imminent and or soon. These were words used by my predecessor, and over the weekend when this question came through, we went through every single RNS since I've been CEO, and I can honestly say I've not used the word imminent and or soon. We're very careful about the words we use. I will use will follow shortly and quickly or as soon as possible, but imminently and soon are not in my vocabulary when addressing matters regarding FAST. We can't predict third-party deliveries other than what we've been provided, and if we're silent, we're criticised. If we pass on third-party information beyond our control, we're held to account. So the company policy is to be extremely cautious in providing updates. I mean, we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't sort of attitude. It's not a criticism of anybody. I do understand everyone's frustration. But what I can say is every RNS that we've put out in respect of, and I'm sure people are talking about Baita, every single RNS has to go through certain AIM rules and be confirmed by the Nomad. And at no stage have we ever presented anything misleading. Every document has been had to be backed up by authentication by the Nomad. So when we received a letter from Baita, the government, the state, the minister, etc., from ANOM, that's what was relayed to the market. As we are, it is compulsory to do so. And if the third party fails to deliver, unfortunately, it's not within our control. But we do have to report on what information that is price sensitive to the market. So we apologise if you believe you've been misled, or if you've been delayed, but believe me, we feel the same frustration the shareholders do. Next question. How do you and the board plan on moving the share price along after the negative of the Q3 production results? There's a lot happening in the company that takes time to see the results. To me, quarterly production reports on two assets does not even remotely or in any way reflect on the overall company's performance or achievement. And I would prefer, personally, I prefer to revert back to the mandatory half-yearly performance results as per the AIM regulation. Everyone, unfortunately, is measuring on short-term performance rather than long, measuring the creation of a huge long-term asset base. And I believe that we're actually being measured in this instance by the wrong metric. The company is evolving and it is juggling a lot of balls. And one quarter, and just so happened to be that we had lack of performance in both assets, does not represent where the company is going. And I do see it is reflected in our share price, which is overall part of the reason why we've been focusing a long time on getting the cornerstone institutional investor on board, which we feel is very, 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 very close to being able to be announced in the, I won't say close, I'm not going to use the word soon or imminently, but I will say that we are in deep discussions with several funds and institutions that we will bring to the market potentially once they are actually closed, not before. Can VAST, the board, and you complete a project overview as soon as possible and update the webpage? That, as I said, is in process now, and you will be getting that new website in the beginning of next year sometime. The next question was regarding finance. Well, the next section is on financials and funding. Question 15. Was the recent placing of shares done for getting Baiatza back online? No. The market will be able to gauge further understanding of what that last placing was for over the course of the next few weeks, next few months. Most of it was covered in the chairman's report earlier, and there were some other uses of the funds that needed to be done rather quickly, hence the urgency of the funding and any speculation as to it was being planned prior to the day of the last placing is nonsense. It was for the benefit of the company, and it will come to light, hopefully, very shortly. The next question, 16. When will we be looking at placing the next headroom, and will shareholders get an open offer for placing, or will there be minimum that people can buy? There are no plans for placing until we finalise the institutional cornerstone investor. As I've always said, the only reason for placings from that headroom were for things that were only for the benefit of the company, and it was always earmarked for the institutional investor, and the balance of the current headroom is definitely there for that purpose. We are looking at other options for funding the company, and hopefully when the institutional investor comes on board, they will be there at the top co level and also be participating at the SPV level, at the asset level as well. Next question, can you get around to releasing news on what the last placing is for? We've answered that already. Next question is, what is VAST net cash position and what are the forecasts for the next 12 months? I mean, this information needs to be closed by RNS only. I cannot release that on this podcast, on this Q&A. We're trying to find a way to publish the cash flow position, moving forward, but we can't release this information without third-party independent confirmation, which is an issue. So, for example, the only way you can show a cash flow is by getting a PFS or a scoping study. We have found, because our projects are at an advanced stage, they're not at an early stage in the normal sense, where companies spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars, getting these reports to the public. These are the costs it takes us to actually get into production. So we need to find a healthy balance of a low-cost way to get these cash flow forecasts to the market legally and within the AIM regulation without spending copious amounts of money and wasting shareholders' money on producing reports rather than the benefit in the net position of our business. Now, the nature of our activities, we're not a steady state stage at this stage of the value curve, and it's not appropriate to provide short-term cash flows to the market. You can see the evolution of the company due the half yearly in the end of year financial reports. But as I said, you know, because of what we've got happening at the moment and because of the various ways we're funding these operations, without a scoping study or a PFS, it's very difficult for us actually to provide cash flow positions to the shareholders. It's an unfortunate position to be in. The next question. Mercuria, in the RNS dated 30th of November, you stated that Vast is behind the schedule in meeting the concentrate volume requirements for the offtake agreement due to poor performance of Manaila. Is this cause for concern in relation to Tier 2 or Tranche B for Mercuria? What are the steps Vast taking to ensure we'll meet this volume requirement in the future? Let me say categorically, the performance of Manaila is not a condition precedent to Tranche B. The concentrate contract is related to the volume over a four-year period, and we have no doubt that we will fulfil these obligations. As far as Vast is concerned, we can state that we have fulfilled all of our obligations under the broader of Tranche B, and we're awaiting Mercuria and their lawyers to provide the funding within reasonable time. So all we can say, and I will state it again for the second time and third time, Vast is not in default of its obligations for Tranche B, and we are expecting it to happen very soon. And I've just said it. next question, 20. What are the arrangements that we put in place with Mercuria regarding the reprofiling of the offtake targets, and are Mercuria aligned with Vast current strategy for improving production? Well, they don't need any reprofiling. We've provided modified delivery schedules. Mercuria are aware of the revised targets and are very understanding of the mining sector issues. They buy concentrate from many mines at various stages, and they understand perfectly that issues are related to mining. As long as the ore is there, the management team is capable. We don't believe that we'll have any problem in making up for the lost production during the last couple of months. And they also understand the fact that Tranche B should have come in about 4 months ago, and that the delays are directly aligned to the CapEx spend at Manaila, which is a direct correlation between delivery slowdown. So they're very understanding, and we appreciate that. Next question was, there was a note of needing Bates to apply for Tranche B drawdown between shareholders was talked down by myself. Now the Vast have got the Baeza license and shareholders can see the money that can not pay back T1. What is the future timeline for T2 drawdown? Is it all okay by Mercuria to carry on with the same deal to supply Vast with the $5.5 million? You converse that T2 would be complete by month end, November 30th, please. A full and complete no nonsense answer. Well, the company is more than capable of fulfilling its obligations of repayment to Mercuria. The T2 drawdown will be forthcoming, and the company, as I said, has fulfilled all of its obligations to receive Tranche B. So I don't think there's not a no-nonsense answer. We are confident we have fulfilled our obligations, and we are awaiting Mercuria to fulfil theirs. Remaining operations, question 22. When will the new equipment for Manaila arrive? A date of delivery must be known at this late stage. Well, the delivery is scheduled for mid to end February. These are third-party deliveries, and I can't give hard dates to the market. They have contractual obligations. Hopefully, they will be fulfilled. If not, there are other alternatives for the company to get heavy equipment on site if they do not arrive, and hopefully it won't be at a cost to the company. Until they arrive, we'll be focusing on doing something a little bit different. My predecessor had a different philosophy to myself, that is, tons, 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 which look great on the quarterly production reports, but tons don't necessarily mean making money and can quite often lead to losing money. So part of the last few months has been a strategy that has been implemented by our COO together with the management team in Romania. And until the new equipment arrives on site at Manaila, we will be looking at lowering costs and increasing profitability, which means lowering production, stockpiling ore, and only running the plant at intervals when they have the capacity to be efficient. So there's no use in running a milling operation if you're not stuffed full. You're paying for electricity, you're paying for reagents, you're paying for labour supply. So one of the things that's not reflected in the production report is the mining of the mine is going to be done in such a way that it will be more efficient and more profitable. We're in the business of making money, not in producing tons, and I've stated that before, but I reiterate that again. Question 23. Assuming T2 lands, have all the plans and processes been com- completed to start immediately building a new processing plant, which will open up at Cullibaba. When Tranche B does arrive, we'll be implementing the project planner, which has been prepared for quite some time. The business priority is getting revenue generating assets up and running as fast as possible. And the nearest term asset to be up and running is, of course, Baeta. We're still convinced that we will be operational within 6 months. And we always knew, and I think it's rather presumptuous that people think that Cullibaba can be built in anything under 18 months from when we receive Tranche B. So the project is in place and we are ready to construct. But without Tranche B drawdown, we cannot hit the ground. And now it's the middle of winter, so once Tranche B is drawn down, and hopefully it'll be very soon, that 18-month clock will begin. So until then, we'll be running Manaila at a place where we will not be losing money or trying to break even as close as possible. But we still believe in Manaila and Cullibaba as a group, and it's a long-term project. And again, let's put things into context. That is, if we were to look at a mine and build a mine such as Manaila, we were talking about a 5 to 7 year process, if not 10, and probably $30 to $100 million in initial costs to prove the resource, build the PFS, build the JORC, then go out for funding. This company has spent less than, in total, about $8, $9 million on Manaila to date, and that is for an operational mine, and we'll then be spending another $5 to $7 million to get Cullibaba operational. So, and the total life of that would have been, including not what we've already produced and received in revenue over that period of time, a net cost to the company of somewhere in the vicinity of $10 million to $12 million to have a fully operational mine that will be income generating and profitable within a 4.5 year period. So, in the space of a time where you're normally doing your feasibility studies, costing twice as much money as we spent on acquiring and operating the mine, we would have been have a brand new mine built with a proven resource. And so I'd like to once again explain to people that we're applying this philosophy to all of our assets, whether it be Baeta, Cullibaba, eventually the Zagra operations that also has had 20 years of exploration done on it. Everything is the same. We're looking at turning things around in a very short time and a very low cost without incurring those massive costs for the shareholders. Sorry, I'm up to 25. When are we looking at seeing the Baeta timeline? Can we have timelines created on all other projects of the company so we can see where we are on projects? This will be updated on the website. It's all part of the new platform that's being built. We're working on Baeta, a new Baeta presentation as a starting course, and probably will release that as soon as we have all the delivery confirmations, because the previous planner was prepared last October. The management has decided not to release that, even though it is prepared, until we have confirmations from all major suppliers for the restart of Baeta. That is almost complete. And we don't want to have any misunderstandings like people have had speculation on Manaila. That may be released before the new website platform is up. We're preparing a new presentation on Baeta, which will capture all of the old information and all the new updates in the project planner, and that should be out before Christmas. I am giving you a hard date. 26, we are waiting for a timeline, so this is a question that's already been answered. 27, has the work started on Baeta supply to reopen? When would sufficient effectively happen in a window of events after parts have been purchased and installed? Work is happening now. The project planners, there's a lot of underground activity happening. A lot is happening on the refurbishment inside the flotation plant. It's a constant. We've got 66 people working on site. Once the project planner is released, you'll be able to see you'll be able to measure the timing of reopening. And what we'll be doing is that in that new PR platform, we'll be providing visual updates from the site as people are working and growing and getting Baeta into production. So it's something that is definitely going to be provided to shareholders. Going to Zimbabwean operations. What has happened to the old Marenghi claims? Are we still pursuing them? If so, what is the updated status on this? The historic claims are a very sensitive issue. They're a matter of the courts. We can't make any public declaration at this point. The next question is, what is happening to the old Marenghi claims before Vast goes forward with the new Marenghi area? Well, I'd like to state that although the the reason why we had a, let's say, a bit of preference on the new heritage claim had something to do with the way we acted very early in the piece on our original Meringue claim. They are totally unrelated. They're totally separate issues. The old Meringue claim has to do with the state mining company. The new Meringue claim has a direct relationship with the Heritage Trust and the community. So it is a completely different resource, completely different counterparts. You know, we are well advanced. We are waiting for final sign-off of the licence, and as soon as that is able to be announced, the market will know. But we are very confident that we will that we'll be proceeding with the new claim with the Meringue claim and the Red Mercury Heritage Trust. Question 31, when is the processing of the sulphide layer going to start at Pixton Peerless? This has been held over since March 2018, still no closer. The reality is that the decision to build the sulphide plant was made by previous management. And sulphides can't be processed in the same circuit as the oxides. So we can't actually start the sulphides until there are no more oxides. Otherwise, you start to lose recoveries on both the sulphides and the oxides. The oxides are nearing the completion end of the pit, and once that's done, the sulphides can commence. But we're not that far away, but there's no use in leaving good quality oxide, low-cost production ore sitting in the pit. The next question is, what are the timelines for Eureka to come online? Initially, it was 6 to 9 months from June 2018. Have you a month to start? Well, it's a very difficult question, as that there's between June and now, there's been a lot of turmoil on the financial markets in Zimbabwe. The over the last 4 or 5 months, there was no ability to raise debt or take money out of Zimbabwe. The market conditions, I can state categorically, have changed in Zimbabwe. The subsidiary has now obtained a funding, 100% funding for the project, and it can recommence. Once it's all signed, sealed, delivered, an RNS will definitely be issued. It's, you know, we're planning on completing in some time in 2019, but we'll provide updates on the new PR platform. But as we are a minority partner in Eureka, as we are now with Pixton, our focus, again, are on our majority assets, both in Romania and Zimbabwe. However, it does not mean that we have not taken our eye off the Zimbabwe assets, but we will be treating them slightly different moving forward, which is to the benefit of the company. Next question, 33. Can funds be taken out of Zimbabwe to facilitate other areas of vast projects? The answer is yes, 100%. And I think during the course of today or tomorrow, there will be a video released that was taken of myself and the Minister of Mines in conference last week in London, where he stated that it is a priority of the government to allow foreign companies or foreign investors to take dividends out of Zimbabwe. So this is a public announcement, and it will, we will be producing a copy of that video shortly. I've also been in discussions with Zimbabwe banks, and the new foreign currency accounts that have been implemented since the 15th of October will allow foreign companies who have foreign currency in their account not to be converted to RTGS and allow us to take our cash out of the country. We've also been in discussions with the Reserve Bank to find other alternative methods to be able to take money out and be paid outside of the country and leave money outside of the country, as long as that we can mutually agree on how to ensure that the government receives their royalties and taxes. So that is also something I've been working quite strongly on and during my course of my last visit and recently in London with the Vice Governor of the Reserve Bank. Next question, 34. After Eureka, what will be the profits of the two projects be used on? Well, that will depend on the company policy at the time, but we will want to start distributing our own profits as soon as possible. So once Eureka is operation and the debt is paid back, then we will be looking at distributing our dividends, unless something happens that requires more capital within country. But no, it is, of course, the objective of the country to get all of these projects into a profitable state and distributing dividends to shareholders. Now, another 20-odd questions have just come in outside of the chat board, which I haven't even had time to read them. So I will read them and answer them. Questions received this morning. I was a bit surprised to hear you mention that Mamma Hila will not be overly profitable. Can you please tell me if this is the current state, or does it also mean when we have the new dumper trucks and new processing facility? No, it only refers to Manila not being profitable now. As I said, it's very difficult to make a profit on any business, and any of you run a business, when 30% of your costs are on a single item that can be avoided. So once the trucks, the new dumpers arrive on site, that will reduce some input pit costs alone, but the actual transport costs to the facility are still the major cash consumer. So once the new processing facility is up in place, we have no doubt that it will be a profit center for the company. Next question. Pixton Peerless seems to be generating all the cash and profit. Can you please clarify where the money is currently going? And once we start to produce the sulfides, where will the money go from that? Well, yes, Pixton Peerless is generating cash and profit. There was a $9 million debt facility that's been paid virtually in full from the sulfide plant. And now the money is going to go towards assisting the repayments on the Eureka facility. And so the money that's been generated out of Pixton until now has been going into the Eureka project. So the money is being used as equity in Eureka and then will be used towards reducing the debt together with the generation, cash generation of Eureka when it starts, so it can be paid off as quick as possible so we can start distributing dividends once that you've got two profit centres running in Zimbabwe. I think I've answered the next question about funding for Eureka. The Giant Mine, where do we currently stand with Giant? Well, it goes back to taking on too many projects. Giant will happen after Eureka. There may be some minor drilling, and the funding of this will happen out of debt because there is local debt available and we are able to take money out of the country to buy equipment when the time arises. But at the moment, Giant is sitting there waiting to be drilled and to increase the resource, but not until Eureka is up and operational. I don't believe that we'll be working on Giant. Zagra Assets, from my calculations, it's taken 2 years to start the very basic drilling exercise on Zagra. Can you please advise why this was the case? Was it funding or other priorities? Well, yes, it was a case of funding and other priorities. We had to find a way to fund Zagra. It's an expensive exercise. It's 27 plus square kilometres over two areas. We are doing the minimum requirement to retain the prospecting licence, which will go into an exploration licence early in the new year. At that stage, we'll be working with joint venture partners to fund the entire activity because that is a monster at a site. We're talking in the vicinity of $10 to $20 million to finish the exploration program. That is not money that we fast as a board feel that it's the best use of money for the company. That will be done like a traditional exploration target, and it will take time. But it is a monster. We believe in the asset, and we will be bringing a joint venture strategic institutional partner on board to fund the entire project. Also, if proven successful, will Zagra need its own production facility or could use the large Manila project? Well, there is no way in the world we can use the Manila project for Zagra. That was something that was really never a reality. It was always going to need its own complex. It is large enough to warrant that on its own. It is potentially 10 times or 20 times. No, actually, sorry, I lie. It is potentially 150 times larger, if not 200 times larger than Manila. It will need a complete new production facility, and that should be funded. That is the reason why we need institutional investment on that particular asset. Next question was related to staffing. If I remember VAS, this is the question. If I remember correctly, VAS were going to recruit some high-level staff, management directors, finance directors, CFO, to enhance skills and experience to grow the company further. What positions are you looking to fill, and why is VAS hard to attract any of these posts? Well, until all the funding was in place, we cannot bring high-level management in to leave other jobs. Now that we have, we believe that all funding is secured moving forward, we are starting the recruiting process. As I said, we have somebody on the corporate development side and finance side who's joined the company as of 3 days ago, who's been extremely beneficial to allowing my time to free up. We will also be getting assistance to Craig Harvey, our COO, to assist him with the geology, and also in the future, depending on which institutional investor comes on board, we hope to leverage off some of their skill sets as well. Next question. It seems like fast new strategy to go after very cheap assets in Zimbabwe and Romania. Although this is good, it does bring some downside. There is hesitation and nervousness in the market on how VAS will fund develop all of these assets, including time and cash. And also importantly, many see VAS spreading themselves too thin. The only thing that we're thin on at the moment is cash. And as I said, institutional investment is definitely the way, and debt is the way that we want to see the company moving forward for specific projects at the project level. I don't think we're spreading ourselves thin. We have more than enough capacity to review these projects and take them to a certain level with in-house, and after that, we will be outsourcing like every other mining company. The next question, where is the balance against production? Where does FAST concentrate on bringing online our current assets, which seem to have been neglected? None of our assets have been neglected. Giant Mine on its own and as a minority, it is not just up to us, it's up to the joint venture partners. And as the Eureka Mine had a significant resource that was proven, had $40 million of infrastructure, requires another $30 million to get operational, but will produce 120,000 ounces per year, making it probably the biggest gold mine in Zimbabwe. That was treated as a priority. Shanafta tailing was only ever going to be used as a stopgap. There's no need in processing Finetza tailings when you've got the level of ore, new fresh ore out of Baitsa. There's 1.8 million tonnes there already. That could be double or triple or quadruple with an exploration program that will be part of the ongoing stay in business capital cost of Baitsa. While you're mining, you can continue drilling underground, and from that we're hoping to develop a further resource in Baitsa, which is much more cost efficient than trucking the tailings back up to the processing plant. Eureka and Zagra, we've had them for quite some time, but nothing concrete from them. And I do believe that some of the shareholders don't understand the timelines of mining itself. I think that all of the assets, including Eureka and Zagra, have moved at an extremely rapid rate. Most of these assets normally take 3 to 5 years to get to the point where we are right now, then a further 3 to 5 years to get them close to being in production, and then operational up to 10 years. Eureka will be operational within 2 years, 2.5 years from acquisition, and Zagra, we took it over in 2016, which was a zero cost to the company. The first real cost that we've incurred is the current drilling, which is rather minimal, and the real costs start at the exploration stage, which will be next year. So, and from that, we already know that there's up to a 3 billion tonne resource. As stated previously, 10% of that being economically viable in 1989, and in 2 years to have a resource that is potentially the largest copper mine in Europe and one of the top 5 in the world, I think that it's very near term. So I really don't say that we've neglected them at all. Next question, diamonds. What is Botswana Diamonds role in Marenge? How active will they be, and will they help us with the funding for any of the assaying and production? Botswana is there purely on a technical basis. They have a carry up until the first $1 million of investment. The strategy will be that they will have to contribute or dilute moving forward. It's entirely up to them if they want to bring along any financial partners. We're working at the moment to attracting finance for the Marenge Diamond Fields, the heritage claim. Our preference is, of course, to be able to have our own funding in place, as the feasibility studies are showing that is a very, very valuable asset to the company, and the less we give away, the better. So once we have a better understanding on the timing for the license, we'll be going to shareholders to discuss the process of moving forward on the heritage claim. But we strongly advise and believe that we should raise debt to get that into production and give away as little as possible due to the magnitude of the asset itself. Next question is copper and gold production. I understand diamonds, I'm not exactly sure. Can you please tell me what are the next steps for the Marenge Red Mercury diamond assets? What are the steps and timescales for production and sale? And most importantly, how will this be funded? Okay, diamonds are very different to copper and gold. In one sense, they're a lot more difficult, and another, they're a lot easier. The reality is depending on the quantum of investment up front, is directly related to how you start the production process. And due to the history of the alluvial diamond fields there, and after being on site and having the team, the geological team on site while we were there, and also having an exquisite management team that we've managed to put together for the Red Mercury Heritage Diamond Claim. We are of the strong belief that it is that there's enough information on the ground to justify going into a reasonable size scale operation moving forward, or small scale production. What needs to be done is some drilling to check the depth of the riverbed, and after that to put in place a sorting process, a washer, a scrubber, an XRT and a sorting room. And this can be actually implemented within 3 to 4 months and be in production once we get the license, subject to funding, of course. Mid-tier mining company, question mark. What is the size and production market cap of a mid-tier mining company? Well, it's mid-tier mining company is, of course, a relative point. Generally, a mid-tier mining company is something over $500 million market cap. Up to $1 billion market cap. Hopefully that answers your question. Next question is, what price does copper need to be to get the payable back from Mercuria? B, make money at overall balance with 16% in copper concentrate, i.e. if copper rose by 20%, would that put money in a position to return cash to Vast? What would be the result before and after new equipment? An increase in the copper price, of course, will help the bottom line. It will compensate for part of that 30% cost of production pre-new plant. And post-new plant, it will just add directly to the bottom line. So, just to put it into real terms, I think from historical reports that once we have the new plant in operation, copper somewhere around the $4,300, $4,500 a ton mark would be the break even for Manayila once we have the new plant in place. But don't hold me to that. That's going from memory. 17, the same for fixed and peerless and gold price. I think that's not a – it's a question is, the same for fixed and peerless and the gold price, what impact price of gold allow for funds to divert from Eureka into other projects? Well, as I stated before, fixed and peerless is a low-cost production. I think if you reverse-engineer all of the production reports, which are in the public domain, we come around the $750, $800 an ounce all the sustaining cost. So everything above that is relative – is profit. At the moment, it was used to pay off debt. Now it's being used to pay – for Eureka. So after that the investment is paid back, that money is there to be distributed to shareholders or to invest in new projects. Next point, 18. Could the company provide a comprehensive work program? I think we've already answered that. Next question is there not a danger in the current scattergun rush to acquire assets and accumulate debt which could risk the existence of the company? No, I don't believe in that at all. I think that the near-term cash projects are more than sufficient to cover all of our costs and overheads and allow us to grow, plus the company policy of bringing in institutional investors at the project levels is going to mitigate any risk for the company. The only risk we have is literally between now and the drawdown of Mercuria, which is very close to being closed. The next question, Manayila, can you give us more information about Craig's work in the last few weeks and how do you think it's going to affect production figures? I think I answered that earlier when I stated that that Craig's been working on operating differently at Manayila, and part of that was to slow down production and start to stockpile, which I have to give credit to not our last CEO, but the CEO prior to that, who that was his modus operandi, that he wanted to implement in Pixed and Peerless, and we did want to implement here in Romania, and we now will now be doing so. So what we're doing is we're going to stockpile the higher grade ore. That means you're trucking down better quality. That means you're running with the plant at its optimum and not wasting money on electricity and reagents when you're not doing proper production. So that's how we're going to answer that question. Next question was, Saga, is the drilling going on enough for a jaw, which quarter do you think it will be jaw released? It all depends on what we hit. You may get a maiden JORC resource out of the drilling that we're doing now, but it's highly unlikely because we're only doing about 3,600 metres of drilling over 21 or 27 square kilometre area. If we manage to hit some very high grade, then you could potentially do a JORC for an exploration target, but I'll have to revert to Craig when he's back in comms. But it will give us a good indication that what we believe is on the ground is on the ground and will allow us to apply for our exploration license early in the new year. Next question, Blueberry, still okay for Q1 for the JORC? We're still awaiting, there were 6,800 samples at ALS. We're waiting for the final results, which they promised us by the 15th of December. From there, we can submit our feasibility study to ANRM. There is a possibility for the maiden JORC to be released in Q1 of next year, but that is all depends on workload. It may fall into Q2. Next one, Moranga, is it still interesting for Vast after they announced no change in digitalisation? The way that we've structured the deal with Red Mercury, which was clearly outlined in, I think, the July RNS, is that yes, it is definitely still interesting, even if there's no change in indigenisation. There's mixed reports about indigenisation. We should know this week what the diamond policy is. But the way that we've structured the joint venture, it allows us to be flexible. We have minimum targets on what net benefits the company is to obtain, and everyone is in agreement with that. So with or without indigenisation change, we will still be proceeding with the Red Mercury transaction. Then I've got another few more questions, and we're almost there. Another question from another person, where are the new trucks for Mamaila? I think I've answered that. Why should we believe what you say anymore? I've misled you so many times. Well, I think that's rather harsh. I don't think I've misled anybody. I've provided information that was provided to us at hand. Anything that was in the control of Vast, we have honoured and kept. Anything that's third party, unfortunately, we can only relay the messages that have been provided by us by authorities and or suppliers. Hopefully, if you don't have faith in the company, my sincere apologies. When will Eureka be in production? I think I've already answered that. And then the next one comes, next set of questions is directly related to me. Please confirm or correct the following statements. Mr. Prolier is personally entitled to 10% of the benefits of the entire Bay Supply asset as a result of being a 50% beneficiary of AP Group. That is correct, almost correct. But please bear in mind that I actually was the owner of Bay Supply with some of the management team when Vast had decided to walk away from Baeza. Then the Vast came back in on an earn-in project basis, which was originally for 50%, and then we gave away 80% for the same money. So, yes, that is correct. And so we have invested our own money and time and risk into Baeza before it was Vast asset and before I was CEO. Mr. Prolet is personally entitled to 3% of the benefits of the entire Blueberry asset. No, I'm entitled to 10% of what remains with Vast, so that's about 2.5%. Mr. Prolet is personally entitled to 10% of the benefits of the entire combined Zaga asset. Again, that was an asset that I brought into the company prior to being CEO. So, yes, that is correct, but there is a threshold of a minimum of a maximum investment by Vast when I have to contribute or dilute. Next one is Mr. Prolet will be entitled to 10% of any asset that Vast later chooses to acquire from the assets held by Remin. Yes, that was originally 15% and part of coming on board as CEO, I reduced that in good faith to 10%. Again, there are some triggers to that as a minimum investment by Vast on each asset, which then I would have to contribute or dilute. Hence the reason why the board and the Nomad had wanted me to convert my equity into shares at the top co-level. And I had insisted that is subject to shareholder approval because I didn't want anybody or the majority of the shareholders to not want me to convert if they didn't want to do so because it could be dilutionary to business. Next question. If the vote grants Mr. Prolet the right to special options, and he chooses to exercise those options, current shareholders will be diluted as the option gets converted into shares into VAST. Yes, that is correct, but they'd also be increasing their holding in those assets. Any conversion will be effectively mean that Mr. Perlet gives his entitlement of the assets to VAST in exchange for shares in VAST. Correct. However, if Mr. Perlet chooses to convert, he will not only receive the benefits of all VAST assets, he also receives 10% of the Bait Supply asset as well, as he is a 50% beneficiary of the AP Group. No, that's not correct. If there is a conversion in up to the Topco, that would include the conversion of the 20% of Bait as well at the same time. It would be nice to keep them separate, but it's not. I don't think it's fair and reasonable. So these are things that need to be finally agreed with the board, and therefore then for future agreed to by the shareholders. Has Mr. Perlet considered any alternatives to special options? Yes, we have. Unfortunately, it's not my choice. It is a choice of the Remuneration Commission and the Nomad and the board, not mine. And I think special options was more than a description than a set of rules that is yet to be agreed. And once it's agreed, it will be put to shareholders. Next question. If Mr. Perlet were to exercise his option and convert them into shares, and in the event this last share moved sharply more than north of 2,000% a year, would I dump my shares immediately? I think there would be a handcuff on the amount of shares I could actually sell during my mandate as CEO. And once I'm sold, what is the incentive Mr. Perlet would remain as CEO thereafter? Again, there would be some handcuffs put in place. That is the end of the questions that I've received previously. I just do want to make three or four new points before I start the chat questions. And that is, look, we are building a range of huge long-term valuable assets to the company. Short-term profits are there purely to assist in the building of long-term assets. That is the way you grow a business. If we were a company that had a single asset and that we would be treating it completely different. Most of our peers on AIM are either one or two mines that are in exploration phase or one asset that's in the production phase. We are looking at growing this business at a rapid rate, and this is some of the initial hurt, is the misconception of what we're actually trying to build. So unfortunately, I believe that once the institutional investors are on board, once T2 is done, I think the market will start to understand what we're trying to achieve as a long-term business. We've got a special entree into both countries. We're coming to the value chain, as I've said before. We've saved tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars on de-risking all of our mines and knowing exactly what we're getting into. If you look at Bayta, where there's $60 million worth of infrastructure, and our total cost to date is somewhere around the $5 million mark. And once it's in production, it'll be producing one of the best copper concentrates on the market today with a 6% copper equivalent, 10 gram a ton equivalent. But that sort of cost and being in production in 6 months and generating almost, repaying itself with all of its upfront costs in under 9 months, these are the things that we need to understand, and that's what we're doing with all of our mines, whether it be Pixton, Eureka, Zagra, Manaila, or Baeta. These are all the same, the diamonds. So I think, we're in a very unique position as far as a junior mining company. The expectations of these AdWord questions mean that some of our shareholders don't quite understand the magnitude of what we're achieving and taking a very short-term view on what we've achieved and what we are achieving over the coming months. And please, I would like you to rethink the way you look at the company as a more of a medium to long-term perspective, to see, and the value of what we're creating as a company is actually not being reflected in the share price. And, slower results purely as a result of not having enough cash and being concerned about dilution because of historical raising prior to my tenure. And we've tried to manage expectations and keep dilution to a minimum and achieve all of what we're trying to achieve for shareholders, without that dilution and not giving away the assets like has been, pardon me, done in the past. So, we're trying to manage expectation on a limited ability to raise cash. As I said, you look at some of our competitors, and I was going through an asset not dissimilar to Manayula recently. We're just on that asset alone, just for the prospecting and exploration stage, they've already raised $15 million. Now they're talking about putting a $50 million plant in. And believe me, the mine is not dissimilar to Manayula, maybe in a better jurisdiction, but you know, we're talking about $65 million of investment before they even turn a piece of soil. So, you know, putting that into perspective and trying to understand what we've done with the little amount of cash that we've had to do so, I think it's a great achievement for the actual management team itself. And the Basin delay is another thing that's caused unfair costs and prejudices against the company. But it was literally beyond our control. We had signed documentations. It was all checked by our Nomad and by our consultants. You know, the delay has put us behind and a couple of million dollars behind the eight ball. We do believe that this will all be put to bed and past us once we're in production in about 6 months' time. Now, I've spoken already for an hour, and now I can lead on to the chat questions from Michael Taylor. What is the current cash balance and how much is required for base supply? Unfortunately, it is not in the public domain and I cannot tell you how much is required to buy it. So it's already been put in the public domain. It's $1.5 to $2 million, and that will be open hopefully in 6 months. Next question from David. Hello, David. Hi, AP. They're coming in thick and fast now. Hi, AP. We keep hearing about ongoing talks with institutional investors, but still nothing has come to fruition. Are there any advanced stage talks taking place or durable? Oh, I think that's general inquiries. Yes, there are advanced stages, not with just one, but with several institutions. All of them are at different levels of due diligence. Others are at different levels of their own growth of their own funds, ready for deployment. No, we're not just talking about it. We are consistently talking about it. Last week alone, I visited most of them in London, and we are very, very confident that we will have an institution on board during the course of next year. I'm not going to give a time, but we're hoping to have them on board as early as possible. Next thing from Naveen. Based on the pipeline project and Vast vision, where do you see Vast market cap in 2 years' time? I mean, I've said it before, and I'll probably get slapped across the wrist for saying it again. I strongly believe that, you know, by this time next year, we should be seeing between $250 and $500 million market cap, and I see no reason why not, based on the projects we have in hand and coming on board. Next one from Michael Taylor. Thank you for running through my questions. You have explained T2, bait supply, Manayula, new equipment, updating the website for project info, Kylie, blah, 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 blah. The only reference I missed is Finanza. Can this be processed? Sorry, I did actually answer this, Michael. It can be processed, but it is at the bottom of the food chain as far as profitability is concerned. To process Finanza, it has to be trucked up to Baeta, which is only 7 kilometres, but when you take into consideration how much fresh ore, and if we ran Baeta just on the ore that we have prepared right now underground and access to, there's 10 years of production there. There's 15 years of production that we know about. That's without doing further exploration. So, yes, we could do Finanza, but it would be, at this point in time, a waste of resource and money, because that means we'd have to increase the capacity of the plant, and we don't believe it is economically viable to do so just for reprocessing tailings. Next one from D. I don't know who D is. Can you reiterate all of the remaining headroom we use with an institutional investment and not be placed in the near future at the current share price? We have absolutely no intention of using the headroom for anything other than institutional investor. And should the occasion arise where an institution would like to take a bigger part of the Vast story at a share price that is a lot more, beneficial to shareholders, then we shall go back to the shareholders and ask for approval. But at this point in time, we are happy with the amount of headroom we have remaining for the institutional investor, and I do not believe that we'll be putting that, even at the institutional level, anywhere near this price. That's the reason why we're not rushing to get the institution on board, because I don't believe it's fair value to shareholders to give it to them at this price. Another question from Dee. Do you agree that the three recent placements at lower prices have been detrimental to the share price and the confidence is lacking this trend? I'd like to just say that there are three things. All three share prices, the first recent placing was actually at a premium to the closing offer price the day before. The second placing was at the offer price of the day before, and so was the third placing. So these funds were needed at the time, especially for Baiza. The first one was to make up for the lost time. The second one was because we were hit with a request that was not part of the contractual arrangement, but after 3 years of arguing with the government, we were not going to not take the opportunity to take the license and miss out again. So they were done at the price. That was the price the market was offering, not what the bid was, what the offer was. So I don't say that they were low priced. That's what the price was on the day. The next thing, does 6 month, another one from D. Gee, D is very active this afternoon. Does the approximate 6 month timeline for BP start when tranche 2 arrive, or is work being done reducing the timeline? Can we expect BP to be operational within 6 months? We still anticipate and believe that we'll be operational within 6 months. It does have directly to do with tranche B, but there are things happening on the ground now that we don't need that amount of funding for, so we are working on those things, and hopefully we can make up for lost time. It's only been a week or a couple of weeks anyway. How long after BP restarts can we expect to see free cash flow? Depending on what you determine as free cash flow, some people say after the costs are repaid, I would say from when we start, what cash is surplus over operational costs. It is anticipated because of the state of Baiza that the first month of production is what they believe operational profit. And next question, once BP is, I don't know if everybody else can see these questions, but once BP is providing free cash flow, will this effectively transform the company in terms of available cash flow? How will you convert this cash flow into value for shareholders in terms of another metric which shareholders can benefit, which can increase the share price? Well, yes, I do believe that once BP is providing free cash flow, it will transform the company, because that means that BP alone can cover every single cost, overhead cost of the company, and any shortfall, even if it's today's value. I think it's extremely transformational for the company, because if it was on a standalone basis, it would be able to distribute dividends, and it will definitely show a bottom line profit to the company in the 2019-2020 financials. In response to you asking shareholders to look at long term, that's fine, and I think we do. Some of you do. But with the recent dilution, shareholders wonder what can you do to change this? I can't change sentiment, unfortunately. All I can do is deliver on what we are doing as an executive team. I strongly believe that, and I've charted this myself being a former trader, if you look at every other one of our peers, other than some standout for very unusual reasons, everyone has taken a hit over the course of the last 4 weeks. And that has to do with Mr. Trump, President Trump and China, as well as Brexit. I think that you'll see a natural bounce back once China and USA do put things to bed, and once Brexit reaches a resolution on itself, I think an increase in copper and gold also might help. We can't do anything about those external factors. All we can do is close tranche B and promise and keep our promises and start lifting our PR game, which we are planning on doing. Next thing from Angus. Are the offtake agreements agreed with Mercuria T1 and T2? Oh, jeez. At the current. Now, I think there's a misconception on how offtakes work. Offtakes work as follows. There is a benchmark that is set in November, December every year for refining price. And, for example, this year it's come down from $82.50 to $80. That's a global refinery cost. Then after that, we then have a fee, which in our case is between $10 and $35 per ton for refining charges, which is where the traders make their margin. And then everything is directly related to the LME price, either 1 month plus or 3 month plus from the date of invoicing or delivering. So there is no predetermined copper price fixed for the period of the contract. It is all determined by market conditions. The only thing that is predetermined is the actual fee to the trader. That's it, which is rather small in the grand scheme of things. Next thing, another one from D. It was poor Ackerman to agree to dewatering costs before the licence was granted. No, it wasn't. It's very simple. The dewatering costs in the beginning when it was being managed by the state were close to $100,000 to $125,000 a month. When we took over, we reduced that down to $60,000 a month. Now, part of that $60,000 a month was actual employment of people, which was mandatory. And then the actual cost of electricity was around $10,000, and putting the pumps down was a considerable amount, but we needed those anyway. The reality is, if we let it flood, which it would have done, we would have lost tens of millions of dollars in assets and put the mine at risk. So it wasn't a matter of agreeing to dewatering costs. It was a choice. Do we dewater or do we lose the asset? So that was, I think, was a very obvious answer. And that's the way we proceeded. Next thing. From Angus again, are the upper and lower copper price ceilings in place for the octane? So I think I've just answered that there is no upper and lower ceiling. It's based on the LME. Another one from Keith. Andrew, one point which concerns me from your call was your comment that the only concerns regarding cash arise whilst we're running T2. How much of a risk is this in reality? Angus, there is no risk. As I said, we've fulfilled our obligations, and we are not concerned of whether we're going to draw down the $5.5 million. And as a smug response to this, I can also tell you that if Mercuria did not decide, which we believe in no way, shape or form they are not going to proceed, there are at least four other off-takers that are ready to step in, just to put that risk to bed. And next, another one from Angus. How quickly could Moringa start producing diamonds from day one of having the license to mine? How much investment would be needed? Angus, we believe it can be in production anywhere between 3 and 5 months from the day we get the license. Investment is all relative as to how large do we want to go from a economic return. You could start with $3 million and get a payback in 12 months, or you could start with $10 million and get a payback in 2 months. It's all relative. It all has to do with what availability of debt or equity is available to the company at the time. One last question from Naveen. Are you open for any potential takeover? If yes, how much do you value your company? Are we open? Yes, of course. I mean, that's all. Let me put it into context. It's not up to me, it's up to shareholders. And I would not sell this company for under $250 to $3 million. That would be my take if I was the major shareholder sitting on the other side. So, yes, I think the company is way undervalued. But if somebody walked in with a check for $250 million, I don't think any of our shareholders would say no. But that is definitely just dream chasing at this point in time. After Beta, will be vast chasing Rimmin assets in 2019? Yes. That was simple. Michael, you've spoken about 6 months from Beta. Has the clock started and when? I think I've already answered that question. The clock started. It just started. From Naveen, again, one final statement. Yeah, being very approachable and keeping everything transparent. It gives our shareholders more confidence to invest in Vast. Thank you very much. I wish the very best of luck and hope to see good returns for our investment. Both you and me, Naveen, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody. I think I've answered close to 70 questions. I've tried to be as honest as possible without breaching any AIM rules. Sorry, somebody's just come in again from D. D, you are very persistent. I admire you. Considering all the asset Vast has, why is there no stake building going on the company with investors? I can only answer that is because we don't have a cornerstone investor. We lost our long-term shareholders late in 2017, which was, to me, unfortunate for the company. which allows a lot of free float and the ability for day traders and market makers to, I wouldn't say manipulate the share price, but take advantage of the position. And part of the reason why we are looking for a cornerstone investor, and that's why we're saying to these institutional investors that if you want to come in at the project level, then you must support us at the topco level, is not because we necessarily need that money, quantum of money at the topco level. It's more about stabilising the share price. And once one institution comes on board and takes 5, 10, 15%, then you'll find other institutions taking up chunks as well, and more than likely out of the marketplace. And that, in turn, will start to stabilise the share price. Again, DD, yes, it does allow a larger entity, but once a larger entity comes in and starts acquiring stock in the public, once they reach that 3% threshold, they will have to release a TR1. It will be well known who the stakeholder is, and I think we'll see a natural increase in price accordingly. It's much better for them to do a negotiation asset purchase. Angus, I've spent a lot of time in Zim over the course of the last few weeks and with senior officials in London last week. I am also talking to institutions and banks. We believe that Zim is getting more and more stable by the day. The policy that's being implemented and the change I've seen on the ground even between April and now is overwhelmingly satisfying for any investor. I'm a great advocate of Zimbabwe. I always have been. I was concerned about Zimbabwe over the previous years because of the inability to take money out or the perception to take money out. Now that there are direct channels for expropriating funds, taking profits and distributing dividends outside of the country to avoid any risk, also leaving money in country and being free to take it out, as far as its licensing processes and government policy related to mining and the open door policy at all ministerial levels, I think that it's extremely stable. And I think you'll see more and more companies stepping in, which is why we've tried to put our foot in as many assets as possible for very less cost. Oh, boy. Jeez, you guys just keep coming. Sorry, I've just lost track. Are the diamonds we lost still in the vault? As far as we know, yes, we've had confirmation that they have been from several entities. The reality is, if they're not there, it's a criminal offence, as it was. They were evidence in an ongoing legal case. Okay, next one, Michael. The chat rooms are viewing your openness and honesty as good asset for us. Look forward to money in your equipment, BP Open. Thank you for your hard work. The share price will have reflects as soon as T2 comes and the picture of us taken alongside your words. Thank you very much, Michael. All right. Thank you very much, everybody. Unless there is something that hasn't already been answered, I'd like to draw this to a close. It's been an hour and 20 minutes. I don't know how many of you stayed on for the ride, but we do as a team, and I personally appreciate everyone's support. And we hope to fulfil all of our promises to shareholders and to grow this business together as a community. Thank you very much. I think that's the end of today's Q&A.
Thank you for joining today's conference. You may now disconnect your lines.